from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Today on the show, we've got lots of interesting, exciting new developments that we're going to be talking about. And we're also going to expound on the topic of is, and we're going to try to be fair as, you know, we can possibly be, on the topic of does religion really poison everything, or is there anything redeeming about it, or so, you know. That's the crux of the question we're going to be asking based on an article that I read on the Chronicle for Higher Education. It's like the newspaper for intellectual snobs. So we're going to be talking about that. But first, I did want to mention sort of some of the cool things that are just happening within the next few like weeks. Like there's tons of changes. For starters, there's a big change in terms of how the shows are going to be distributed. For those of you who are not who didn't read the article that I put up with all the details, which you can go check out, it'll be in the notes. The shows are changing from what we had now, which is I guess a disorganized mess of whenever the fuck they're up, to Mondays and Wednesdays. Although quite technically, it's midnight on the Sunday and midnight on the Tuesday. And the reason I'm doing this is because, you know, based on my research, you guys listen to the show when you're commuting or when you're exercising, and Monday and Tuesday are the worst days of the week, are they not? They suck. So I'm going to try to brighten up those days specifically for you. And there are going to be two free shows every week, and that means we're eliminating the whole old idea of bonus shows, and instead it's just going to be like if you want a backlog of longer than 3 months, then you got to be a hardcore subscriber. So those are big changes. But all of this is happening slowly because I don't want anybody to feel pissed off. So we're going to be sort of edging this by the time it's the new year, you know, 2013, if we make it there, because, you know, who knows, right? The world could end, Ryan, or something?
Maybe.
Anyways, until then, we're just going to be slowly incorporating this new system and trying to make sure that we're part of everybody's, like, people's habits. You know, I don't want any shows that are not being heard anymore. I think that's a stupid decision.
Well, yeah, it's always been kind of unfortunate whenever there's a bonus show and only a couple of hundred people get to listen to it. So
yeah,
it'll be nice knowing that everything gets listened to equally, and you know the people that really want to have a backlog and go back and check everything out. I think it's kind of neat.
Yeah, and plus, you know, the truth of the matter is I feel like the $20 option, I mean, it was fading anyways. People were barely using it. They were switching instead to the hardcore membership because I find that it's either people who just really don't want to give you money for whatever reason. I don't know what the fuck the reason. Or they do. And, you know, with a lot of people that were even telling me $20 is a bit low, I'd contribute more, which is why we started doing the $5 thing. But now it turns out that there's just as many people who are, you know, actually more now. They're overtaking the regulars, that I'm like, why are there even regulars? No one even cares about the fucking regular service because the system wasn't really designed with long-term things in mind. It was just, you know, at the time when we made it, we were desperate for money. And we thought that maybe a good way to do that was by extorting people.
Yeah, fumbling along in our attempts to figure out some kind of business model for our weird podcast/blog. Business.
Hey, you know what? The fact that there is a model at all is says a lot, because most people don't. They're just like, I'm going to record my voice on my shitty Logitech speaker thing, and then it should be fine, and then I'll have a show.
Hey, you know? I'm wearing Logitech speaker/microphone.
Right. Something I would desperately want to change as soon as the payout comes through, by the way. I want to improve our sound quality, which is also something that I'm taking very seriously moving forward anyways, because once in a while it's like hit and miss sometimes. I've had some people, you know, tell me like some shows the sound is great, sometimes they're not so great, and that's just because of the difficulties of the way that we have done things in the past. This is no longer an issue, so I want to fix that thing. So yeah, you say goodbye to your Logitech. I'm going to be sending you something better.
Ooh, gifts, technology, I'm excited. Actually, you know what I've been thinking about buying?
What's that?
I want to buy basically a VR helmet.
A VR helmet. Do they have those yet?
They do. Sony actually has these big goggles that you like strap onto your head, and it's like having, I think, what were they saying? It was like the size, the equivalent size of the television that's like right in front of, or the screen, because I'm going to use it as a monitor, that's like right in front of your face. It's like hundreds of inches.
Are you
it's
the lawnmower man? Like, I just don't really understand why you want to do this.
Look, I just come to the realization that since the 20s, we've been stupid monkeys staring at tubes, and the end. This is the end of it. We've all been hunching over, sitting in our chairs, dying. You know, sitting around kills you.
I know it does kill you. I try to lie down.
So I'm just trying to slowly move myself away from sitting in a chair staring at a gigantic monitor.
So what are you going to do? You're going to put VR helmet and you're going to walk around?
I don't know. Maybe like in another month or so I'll get like... Then I'll really be the lawnmower man. I want to get one of those hanging structure things and I'll just hang.
Wait. From the cell?
No, not like from the cell. More like an actual like gyroscope thing.
No, you can't be serious. You know what? Here's what's funny. Ryan did this. He's always been an early adopter when it comes to 3D, judging by the fact that you were the only person I know on this planet that had a Virtual Boy.
Hey, I didn't buy it because I liked it. I bought it to sell it for like $800 on eBay.
Fine, whatever. I just think that it's a gimmick like the Virtual Boy. It's not. We're not there yet, man.
No, we're not. We're not there yet, but we're one step of the way there. And I've decided to become an early adopter because
you're crazy.
Well, I just think it'll be better to be fully immersed. You know what I mean?
Better for what? I mean, I got to tell you, what are you trying to immerse yourself in? Porn? I mean, what do you need to immerse yourself in on the internet? That's so crucial.
I just don't understand what you're talking about. Like, if I have an option of basically submerging myself into the internet, then I'm going to do it, rather than just sitting here staring at a screen.
Well, so you see, this is always where you and I disagreed, because I thought that if there was a way to connect yourself to the internet, I'm like, don't do it. Don't do it. I think it's a bad idea, because I think that what would end up happening is that you just have imprints of you out there on some weird nebulous thing called the interwebs, and that's just going to be all kinds of fucked up, man. The future is scary. Future is scary.
That's rational. That's a rational way of looking at it.
I like to think so. I jumped to the least obvious conclusion first. The fact that we're going to create endless clones of ourselves in some kind of virtual online world. And then that's to be feared, because every essence of your personality will essentially be diluted. You will be an automaton. You will be an ant at that moment.
Jeez, that's alarmist right up there with the whole legitimate rape thing.
Are we not? Is that one of the topics we're covering? Because I'm totally not ready for that one.
Nah, we don't have to. It's okay.
Good.
It does have something to do with religion, obviously. I mean, you know, right-wingers saying stuff because God says abortion is bad, blah, 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 blah.
Well, you know, actually, we can talk more generally about this. Why don't we jump into the topic I really want to go into? Because I'm sure we're going to, you know, jump around as is usual. But this is the article that I was mentioning that I had read in the Chronicle for Higher Education, which I had never heard of before. But, you know, it's apparently that's because it's like a newspaper for intellectuals and the academia and shit like that. You know, I'm not part of that world. So didn't know that it existed, but I have one of those alerts that always tries to tell me, hey, is somebody talking about atheism or whatever? Because I'm always curious about what people are saying. And there was an article that was entitled, Does Religion Really Poison Everything? And this is a kind of, I suppose, you know, what annoys most people about this is like a very accommodationist from a theist perspective kind of article, saying, well, you know, new atheists, which I suppose is us, are big meanies that go around, deride religion, and ignore any of the good that it can cause. And this is essentially the focus of his article. Now, I want to deal with a few things about that article first, all right? I think that maybe I'm going to be petty here, but it's some of the points that I feel are always mentioned, like the one thing that you can say the religion does. So he cites in the article a study that found that it was a study called God is Watching You. So people were given money, and they were given a choice to give some of that money away. But before, they were primed with certain words. Now, if some of those words were words like divine, spirit, sacred, like religious-sounding words, then the person would be likely to donate more money. So instead of like $2, the average went up to $4 of how much money they gave. So this is one of the things he's like, well, look at this. God, in the, at least in this study, the idea of God seems to make people more generous, or at least more likely to want to do good if you assign religious meaning to the thing that they're going on about. All right, so that's the first thing that I want to mention. So when I say this, is there anything that pops in your mind saying, well, that doesn't sound particularly right?
Well, yeah, the test sounds, the actual... I'm wondering if basically the paper that they're talking about is being peer reviewed, and if they can actually find any kind of real connection between what they're doing and what their conclusions are. I find that there's often a pretty big gap between the data that gets collected and what they end up saying it means, and I'm always a little bit skeptical.
It's a good position to start with. I mean, if you really want to know how to critically analyze that from the layman perspective, I strongly recommend Bad Science by Ben Goldacre. He basically covers how these kinds of analysis are done and why meta-analysis of studies are more reliable than individual studies. Because you never look at the one study. So one study did that. Big fucking deal. It may have been done by monkeys. Like, we don't fucking know their qualifications. Do we know what, like, did they even, mention the kinds of potential mistakes and errors? Like you said before, like, what's their methodology, right?
And yeah, like, if a person's being given $5 and then you spit a bunch of religious terms at them and then say, okay, how much money do you want to give? There's a chance that they're going to have figured out kind of test subjects want to please the people that they're working for, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So... If they get an idea that they're expected to do something, then they're more likely to do it. So,
well, that's one problem. The other problem I find just from the get-go is, why do we equate generosity with morality? Because I don't necessarily feel that those two are intertwined. Sure, I mean, I think that generosity is a quality of morality, but I don't think that that's actually the most important thing about being moral, is to be generous. I'm like, generosity can be easy when you have a lot of money. Do you know what I mean? Like, Bill Gates has given billions of dollars. That's great. He still has billions of dollars. That's a bit easy for him when, you know, you look at someone who's having to make a choice between food and rent. You know, how do we measure their generosity? And is their generosity more meaningful even though they gave less? So, I fear trying to associate morality with monetary value because obviously that's not working out for us too good, is it? And there's that other tainted side of things, which shows that people, when they have a lot of income or a lot of money, tend to feel less socially empathic with other people. Like, they feel more independent and less reliant on others. So, you know, in another weird sense... what does money do to people? Well, obviously, let's not use this as our gauge for morality, shall we? I think that's bad methodology, one. The second problem I have is sort of in these same studies, like, that he was mentioning, there seems to be a lot of, I mean, like, the same way that we're accused of ignoring all the good aspects of religion, which I will say sometimes we do, I feel like the people who try to make the case for why religion is good have to ignore the bad. Because how much bad is okay in terms of the good that you produce? Like, what's the balance? How does it scale? Is it 10 to 1? 100 to 1? Like, how many evil things before you're like, you know what? Good can come from other places. And, you know, that's the second part, too. The part that I find that's the biggest fallacy about all this is that people, you know, like, where really are the... We live in a world that is already controlled by religion. It's difficult for us to measure what irreligion does. Everybody's making these strong assumptions. Oh, no, religion leads to people being more moral. It's like, well, then why do primarily non-believing countries have lower prison rates and crime rates? Why is that? That seems to be a much more important statistic than how much money you give if in a test... There's also something else that bugged me about the article where I'll read you the quote. It says, see also a study that found that religious people were, in some instances, more likely to treat strangers fairly. What does some instances mean? Right? Like when you're trying to measure the morality of someone, you're saying, well, in some instances, he does good. Yeah, but what about the other instances where the opposite is fucking true? Like studies that found that, religion made people less likely to trust people from outgroups. Why is that being ignored here? If the main thesis is that religion doesn't poison everything, wouldn't they have to make the case that religion doesn't make evil rather than trying to make the case religion does good? You know what I mean? I still feel like we're trapped in that whole question of how much good to how much evil is acceptable. So I think that we should just sort of like use a modern day example. Let's talk about the Catholic Church. I don't know if you read this. There was the Economist was trying to estimate how much money the Catholic Church spends every year. They put it at something like $171 billion of just money that's being spent. So let me ask you this question. Do you feel like the church is doing even 10% of that of good? And if they are, is that an acceptable fucking amount for the 90% of evil?
As in, with the money that they're spending, are they accomplishing as much good as they could?
Well, because here's the thing. I mean, like, some of the articles were trying to point out the Catholic Church is the, you know, like, the biggest charitable organization in the world. Right? But this is a bit of a problem because so much of that income is also partially subsidized by the fact that the Catholic Church operates hospitals that are paid for by, you know, government and taxpayer monies. So how much do we measure of their good actions that come from, like, their own collections, you know, the money that they take from people? That's the first problem, right? Like, and I can tell you right now that 100% of the monies that they use for hospitals and things like that are not going to those services. There's plenty of examples of money being moved around to, guess what, pay settlements for kids being sexually abused. In a real sense, taxpayer dollars have been paid as, you know, a kind of hush money. And you know what the biggest fucking tragedy in this whole thing is, too? The priests that work in these kinds of parishes, see, there's no real, they don't have a union, priests. So what happens is if the archbishop decides, well, we're going to move all this pension money that we've been saving for you guys to essentially pay victims of child abuse, you don't get anything. Your retirement fund doesn't exist, so fuck you. And there's nothing they can do about it. Now, of course, you know, you chose the wrong side. You know, that's a bit cruel, right? What are you going to say? These are their own people. They can't even treat their own fucking employees with dignity. It's pretty fucked up. And that's just a small scale example here of what we're talking about. It's like, how messed up is it that an organization that makes $171 billion in terms of expenses is forgiven of all of these other, you know, crimes and is not being held accountable for any shit? Like, they don't have to submit any examples of where the monies go because they're a religious organization in the U.S. Is that pretty fucked up?
Yeah, it's kind of bullshit. And you see this all the time. I mean, it bugs me when we talk about charitable donations and then you hear, like, say, Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney says that he gave a whole bunch of money to charity, but in truth, he gave a whole bunch of money to the Mormon Church, which is basically kind of one of their edicts. You got to pay X amount or get the fuck out. And the thing about that is that they aren't a charity in the normal sense of the word. Like, if you give money to Doctors Without Borders, then that's going to help Doctors Without Borders operate and do lots of good. The Mormon Church has a variety of different ways to use your money.
Oh, yeah, they have businesses. Yeah.
Oh, tons and tons of businesses. There's a really in-depth article in The Economist that breaks down where the Mormon Church's money goes. And the amount of it that would go towards anything that I would consider to be actual charity is surprisingly low.
But see, that I think this is where the problem lies. Because I think that if you are like a religion and you sheathe yourself under the cover of some charity, then you're kind of immune, right? And because there really is no openness, like we mentioned before, I mean, a lot of articles that are talking about the finances of religions, there a lot of it is guesswork. You know, with the estimate of $171 billion is just an estimate. It's based on how many employees the Roman Catholic Church has, which is about a million, which is pretty much one of the biggest employers. I think Walmart beats them. So we're talking about a gigantic organization here. But, I mean, imagine if Walmart didn't have to submit any books. What could it do? You know, what could it get away with? I mean, I can't even imagine. The fact of the matter is, like, on $171 billion, too, that's money that's not being, that's not being taxed. That's money that you are having to pay because you're being taxed for the money that's not being taxed on these fuckers running businesses. It's not charities. Like, oh, we have a bookstore. Okay, why aren't you paying fucking taxes on this bookstore? It's a business. Well, we're a religion. Great. Fan-fucking-tastic. I should find a way to make my business a religion, because it's the best scam of the century.
Yeah, but it's going out of style. I saw a study that basically said over the last, 30 or 40 years, there haven't been any significant new arrivals on the religion scene. Like, back in the day, I mean, you had Scientology, the Hare Krishnas, there was a whole bunch. Like, back in the 60s, 50s, 60s, there was tons of religions that were popping up all the time. Now, not so much. So I think maybe the door is closed on creating your own new religion and getting people to fall for it.
I think that there'll always be, you know, like the small cults that pop up every now and again. But you might be right that it's much more difficult to start a new religion. And I think the big problem, too, is just the ease of information that you have. Like, imagine if there was the ease of information today and or back in the 18th century when Joseph Smith was trying to start his fucking religion, 19th century, and you know, you could look him up and say, oh, this guy's been in jail for fraud. I see. Well, let's not listen to him. You could do a little bit of background check on people. That sort of helps. Not that it's sort of, in a way, it might actually have some negative elements. Like, for instance, what about some cult guy that just is an internet sensation? I don't know how or why, but it could happen. Like a YouTube like religion. Who knows?
Like Barry Obama.
Right. Exactly like that.
The Antichrist.
But I think, okay, well, in terms of the Catholic Church, here's what I think is a bit funny about their strategy. In the short term, they're actually making more money, because what they're doing is they're closing smaller parishes, essentially robbing them blind of their funds and shit like that, and leaving a wake of extremely poor, impoverished churchmen who will undoubtedly have to pay for, by the way, with food stamps or welfare, who knows what, because they're not being taken care of. So they're closing those things down because they also see the fact that it's becoming almost impossible to get new priests. Nobody's wanting to fulfill these jobs. And it's not just because you can't get married. It's I think that at the core, it's a pretty corrupt organization. I mean, when they want to jail the Pope's butler for essentially releasing documents, like, how can he be jailed for this? For leaking documents, I ask you, when only one man is in jail for having raped children. And we know there's thousands of these assholes. I'm like, yeah, the justice system is all kinds of fucking messed up. And of course people are going to see that corruption. I mean, you can't avoid it. Maybe in the old days, you know, like this, the Roman Catholic Church has an old boys attitude and mentality that doesn't really match with today's mentality. That's going to be really hard for them to compete in the future world of ideas. Like, who's going to be there to tell everyone to believe in Jesus? A bunch of really dusty old dudes that you don't want to listen to no more? I mean, like, I hear their death rattle. Unfortunately, this organization has been around for a few thousand years, and they have a shitload of money and property and power. like a disturbing amount of it. So they don't really go down easy. I mean, when we have to face an enemy that has $171 billion annually of resources, yeah, it's a tough fight. I'll tell you what, if it was fought with money, we would have lost already.
Yeah, they kind of outspend us a little bit.
Just a little bit, yeah. Like, they get to have sexy campaigns, huge... Like, you remember those Youth Day rallies and stuff like that, where they would just... You know, these are essentially gigantic fucking parties that they get to just organize. And plus, I mean, when the Pope goes to a country, he doesn't even pay for the cost of it. The countries cough up the fucking cost, i.e. taxpayers. So imagine you got to travel everywhere for free, too. Yeah, tough to fight those assholes. And they've got plenty of money to keep lobbying governments to not extend statutes of limitations on rape. You know, that's literally where a lot of their money is going, in the U.S. at the very least.
Lovely.
I know, isn't it, though? I mean, when you scratch at this thing, the degree of corruption is just bound to make anyone sick. And let me ask you, I mean, you go into any organization, you work for a company, you're going to do your research about it, you're going to find out stuff about it. And you're not going to want to take part. I even know people that went through that similar phase. Like my dad's girlfriend's daughter. She dated a guy who was going to be a priest. Well, I mean, after he decided that was a really fucking bad idea. Because, I mean, who wants to join the most bigoted organization, like openly bigoted organization in the world right now? They chose that hill to fucking die on, and I don't even think they realize the consequence of that and how the tides will turn, and really not in their favor. But
yeah,
hey,
well, the whole thing is coming down. I mean, you can see it already happening. Countries like Ireland, you see their reputation as just being tarnished. It's not going to come back. It's only going to get worse. They're only going to keep on making stupid edicts, saying stupid things, and trying to force people to do crap that just doesn't make any sense in the modern world.
Well, here's the thing. Like, the title of the article that we're talking about is, "Does Religion Really Poison Everything?" And I think it's important to understand, what is a poison, right? Because we're using a metaphor here. So I think it's important for us to define this metaphor. And I want to mention that a poison isn't always something that kills you, by the way. Sometimes a poison just eats away at you, slowly but surely. It degrades you. It basically deteriorates you. It takes away the parts of you that are healthy and good. And I think that accusation for religion still stands. I can find so many examples of evil that it wouldn't even matter if it was fucking 50-50. That's not a ratio that I think is acceptable to anybody. We really have to realize that it's not as though we're forced here with a false choice. Either the supposed good of religion or now the evils of non-religion. And those are not the choices that we're fucking offered. The choices that we're the choice that we have to make is this: does religion poison everything? The answer is yes. It poisons politics. It poisons personal relationships. It poisons even your own relationship with yourself, making you feel guilty for having sexual thoughts, making you feel guilty for being fucking human, basically, making you feel like a deteriorated piece of shit that needs to stop listening to themselves. I mean, that very assumption is really what poisons everything. And if you look at all the root problem of religion, it's because people believe things uncritically. And that's the evil of faith. There's a guy that I want to have on the show. He's basically, he covers a lot of the child witch stuff that I've been just obsessing over, except for he does it, you know, he is African. He's been there. He lived there. He knows exactly what's going on. And I really wanted to talk to him because I wanted to ask him, how much does religion poison everything over there? Specifically, what I wanted to ask him was, do we need to placate religion when they go around preaching that faith, just as a concept, that this is a good thing? And when I see nothing but the greatest evils being committed for irrational beliefs, you know, for irrational reasons, and those irrational reasons are fueled by religion. They exist within that bubble. They have to promote that bubble. And I think that that's why it poisons everything. It makes good people do bad things. And that's why it's a poison. I don't care if it makes anyone behave slightly more morally, which there's not strong evidence to suggest that's even fucking true. And I don't care if it makes people less generous, because what I want is people committing less evil. That's all. I don't need you to give more money to charity. I just need you to subtly stop supporting indefensible acts. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a pretty reasonable fucking request.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that to a certain degree there's, you know, one of the big push and pulls between atheists and believers is this whole idea that, you know, there's no middle ground that we can meet. And honestly, I think a lot of atheists feel this way, that, you know, if you want to keep religion in your life, that's fine. But there's a couple of ground rules that we all need to agree on. You know, stuff like abortion, stuff like condoms. We, at the very least, need to hit a point where we're saying to religious people, you know, you can feel however you want about abortion, but they need to, we need to, you need to stop trying to force them out of existence.
Well, here's the problem. I mean, the whole idea that let's reach a middle ground is not an acceptable idea, because if we do reach a middle ground, we're going to be way more on the right anyways. Because, look, the religious fundamentalists, as much as people like to compare atheists as fundamentalists, I'm like, I don't think you have a good idea of what political spectrums are and where atheist, quote-unquote, fundamentalists fall within that spectrum. We're all pretty fucking moderate, okay? Some of us may be a little bit more liberal, but it depends on your fucking tastes. But a person who's religiously conservative, a fundamentalist, is so far to one side, to reach for the middle is still unacceptable. Now, that's not to say I'm not willing to compromise, but I'm not willing to go halfsies on shit.
Yeah, well, we're not talking about going halfsies. I'm just talking about, it's kind of like, I don't know if this ever went up. I think this was in one of the Lost shows that we recently talked about, the whole idea of software updates and the way that, you know, you'll look at something and you say, well, here's a couple of problems, let's fix that and release a new version. And wouldn't it be great if we could deal with our problems like that? There's obviously flaws in the ways that religion operates. We just need to recognize those and, you know, release a patch.
Well, there was a funny story I was actually uncovering slowly but surely as over the weekend after the campaign had finished and I was obsessing about the video game franchise Assassin's Creed, which is a historical fiction game that's very reminiscent of... what would I say is like the Da Vinci Code in a sense, but you know, it, obviously because it's a video game, you get to have a lot more story than a 2-hour fucking movie, right? But in any case, they've been playing this one game, and one of the main characters that they talk about is Leonardo da Vinci, who I assumed, you know, because I love the man, that I knew everything about him. But of course, with the game sort of like showing all these kinds of ridiculous things that he was doing, I'm like, surely all this can't be true, which obviously some of it is not. But I uncovered some really interesting elements of not only Da Vinci's life, but also what life was like around there. And I think it gives a good example of that, you know, going back to that whole, does religion really poison everything? So around the Renaissance, the early Renaissance, there was a movement that was starting called humanism. It may sound familiar because many of us describe ourselves as humanist. But it was still a movement that was still intertwined with religion at the time. And one of the things that the humanists were concerned about or were pushing for with, you know, the Catholic Church, which at the time would not be described as humanist, was for them to release more of the documents that the Catholic Church had essentially banned, right? And one of the early attempts to decipher one of these ancient manuals was Epicurus. You remember Epicurus? He had that whole argument of, like, why is there evil? You know, if God can prevent it but doesn't, he's malevolent. If he can't prevent it, that he's not omnipotent. Just the basic challenges of religion that were, you know, proposed over 2,500, you know, 300 years ago by this one dude. And as soon as that comes out, like, these humanists were really fundamentally thought, well, you know, scientific evidence and thought is going to pretty much legitimize what we believe, that God exists and, you know, through the person of Jesus Christ and so on and so forth, because they didn't know any better. But the hilarious thing about humanism is it really opened the door for all that shit to be untrue. They didn't know it at the time. It's not like Leonardo da Vinci would be qualified as an atheist. But if he had lived today, he fucking sure well would be, if he wanted to declare himself a humanist, because you can't have... The religious undertones are all the things that are useless about humanism. In fact, religious undertones take away from humanism. Like this whole concept that you're a sinful creature, so on and so forth, fallen. How is that a humanistic fucking perspective of the of humankind? And the misogyny of the fucking of Christianity need not be mentioned. This is also something that the early humanists did not share. But, you know, they were a bit fringy. There were intellectuals who had basically were more interested in the real world than just the fantastical. And guess what? I mean, its origin is in our free thought today. And I'm not going to go and suddenly deny the religiousness of the men who came up with this. But I would say that it, had it not been for the religious indoctrination, that shit would have been available to them 2,000 fucking years ago. I would have. I can only imagine what we would have done with it. Does religion poison everything? Holy fucking shit. What have we covered so far? It keeps you back. It makes you ashamed. It makes good people do violent things. Oh, but let's cover the good. It makes you slightly more generous. Well, okay, case closed then. I guess we should all be religious. Let's fucking hang up our atheist gloves and say, like, no, obviously that tiny amount of good definitely justifies it. I think at the end of the day, what they want is not, you know, like, obviously a person who writes an article like that just wants it to be, like, to say in a subtle way, stop being meanie faces, atheists, I like my religion and I'm still a good person. And, you know, that's not the claim that we're making, is it? We didn't say that you couldn't be a good person. We're just saying that your religion poisons the ability for people to do good. Because they will do evil as a consequence of their fucking beliefs that are ridiculous. And I mean, like, if you've got a problem with that, well, you can suck it. That's my response.
Yeah, there's also the little point that it allows people to put themselves into a position where their ideas aren't allowed to be challenged, or there's no give and take. I mean, trying to argue with religious people about certain hot button topics that they've decided, you know, they're gonna stick their flag in and it ain't moving an inch. How are you supposed to argue with that? They think this is an I'm going to keep on saying edict. It's my word of the show, people.
It is. It should be like one of those ding, ding, ding. Ha ha. The
wine, yeah, take a drink and go, God, that guy.
Well, I was going to do a Pee Wee Herman thing, but yeah.
Yeah, from God, just saying that this is how it should be. And how are you supposed to argue with that? What kind of reasoning are you allowed to say when, you know, a religious person says, well, we have a dominion over the earth and all animals, and therefore we can pollute it as much as we want. You just say, well, you know, they've taken a look at how much we can pollute it before things get really bad, and we've already basically put on the books. This is another just thing that I read. This was a really depressing environmental study.
Oh boy,
that I checked out that I think really hammers home the situation that we're in right now. There's something called the two degree goal, which basically means that all of the countries got together and we basically agreed that we should try and keep global climate change global warming under 2 degrees. And right now it's already changed 0.8 degrees. Unfortunately, we have so much coal, like just basically like carbon emitting fuels that we've already got on the books, like Shell, BP, all of these different companies. They've discovered this stuff. They have it. It's on their books. It's already considered an asset.
It's ready to be burned.
It's in the ground, but they're going to pull it out and they're going to burn it. And the amount that we already have on the books that's just already exists in virtual wealth on the stock market is already five times as much coal as we're able to burn to keep the temperature below a 2 degree change. And once that 2 degree change happens, that's all of the polar ice caps. That's basically half the islands in the ocean becoming underwater.
Well, the thing that people have to understand is that 2 degree changes depending on where in terms of latitude you are. So temperature differences in the equator are not necessarily a big deal, but it's the temperature differences up north that fucking matter. Yeah,
I'm not sure how they're measuring it, but it's it might be some kind of average across the Earth or something like that.
Probably, because it would be. I mean, each different, like I said, latitude would have to have a different goal, but I'm assuming it's a global average.
Yeah, but it's
which is a very significant. You know, it may not seem like a big number to everybody. Well, what's 2 degrees, right? I don't think you really understand the potential kind of problems. I mean, like, look at this year where you're just like, man, is it hot. Yep. The atmosphere's thicker. It's trapping more fucking heat, making it all hotter. And you know what? Here's the good news. It's energy. Oh, well, that's good. We like energy, right? Well, not really. Not that kind. Not the kind that cook us. Yeah? Let's not have that situation. That's all.
Yeah, it's all just really unfortunate because it hammers home the idea that, you know, we need to figure out, or we need to change the way that we're thinking now, not 50 years from now, because by that point it'll be too late.
Well, there is a problem with that whole "we need to act now" thing, right? You know what that is. It's old people. I'm going to sound like an ageist piece of shit right now, but I have no choice but to say it. It's like the continued failure of democracy has everything to do with the population bubble we're experiencing, where there are more old people than there are young people, and old people are notorious for not wanting to change things. And, you know, we could go an entire generation where we skip the power transfer because of how much longer they're fucking living and how much longer they have power. How are we supposed to do that without fucking a violent revolution of our own parents? How are we supposed to fucking do this? We can't do it with our votes. It is impossible to do it with your votes. People will always vote against your interest. They're old, they're stuck in their ways, and they don't like change. What are you supposed to do about that? Put old people in ovens? That's not really a solution.
Yeah, I don't know. It's overall a bad situation, and religion isn't helping us because it allows people to hold illogical beliefs that stop them from acknowledging the reality of situations.
Well, it's also, I mean, think about the two major religions that are competing right now, Christianity and Islam, right? Well, forget Buddhism and Hinduism for now and their sort of whole mess. That's its own thing. But we'll focus on these two religions because the thing that I find most disturbing about those two religions is that they really are looking forward to the end of the world. That's the biggest problem. I mean, I don't even care, like we said before, that you're more generous. Maybe you do that because you think the end of the world is coming. That doesn't really make you make good decisions. Look at all those people that always think that the end of the world is coming, you know, like the 2012 people. How many people do you think are going to kill themselves December 12th? I think a lot of people. I think a lot of people are going to make some really, really financially stupid fucking decisions. That's almost a guarantee. Because, and this is just a preview of the kind of pre-existing belief that half of all Americans, 100 fucking million and plus people, believe. And you're telling me that this is not dangerous or poisonous. This is what you're telling me. Come on now. That's the fucking scariest thing in the world. If I told you that half of your population was looking forward to the destruction of your planet, does religion poison everything? No, sir. It makes you more generous. I need to bitch slap you back to Baghdad. Saying something like this. I'm the Chronicle of Higher Education. I'm like, hire me to fucking bitch slap this guy, because I just did. He's got nothing left. You know, and every time, every single, there was this one thing that really pissed me off too. I mean, maybe I do this sometimes where I don't make references, but there was this one guy, he cited this thing where some researchers, I don't know who these researchers were, found that in religions with higher religious or higher belief in hell, there was less crime. He didn't compare, though, countries that had belief in hell compared to countries that didn't have belief in hell at all. He just compared countries where they had a strong belief in hell or a weak belief in hell and a strong belief in heaven. I'm like, both of these people believe in nonsense. But here's what you find. Where countries where there is strong religious belief, yeah, they have more crime. You know, and the U.S. is included in that because it's as religious as Turkey. And, you know, every time you read stories about crazy shit happening over there, I'm like, you're Turkey, too. That's how religious you are. You're like Turkey.
We are all Turkey.
I like that. That's touching and so true. Okay, you know what? I think we should wrap up the show. But before we go, I want to remind everybody about those changes in case you forgot. So two shows a week, that's going to be your Mondays and Wednesdays are going to be taken care of. So for whatever trip you got going on, we're going to be featuring more interviews. And what I'm looking for right now, I'm putting a call out to people, is I'm looking for a webmaster who also wants to be a part owner, part business partner of The Good Atheist. I basically want a full-time web host, and I'm willing to share some of the profits of what's currently making and what's going to be there in the future, because we have some money. So it's not going to be only future profits. There will be some money to redesign the site. But a person who takes that responsibility and wants to be the webmaster, I'm like, this is a permanent position that I'm looking for, and it's a paid one. So anybody who's a fan, who's got some serious skills, because I need someone with some fucking skills. Don't tell me you know CSS. You need to know more. Okay, you need to know lots of shit. You need to give a crap about the good atheists, because in a sense, everyone who's involved in the organization so far, those are volunteers or people who I have, you know, worked with, they've been fans and they've cared about this fucking show, and they care about the quality, and that's what I'm interested in. People are going to have those two things in mind, because number one, you're going to make sure that it's good, and number two, you're going to probably, you know, stay on my ass and make sure that I keep providing good shows and stuff like that. So two important qualities that I'm looking for. So if you think you have those, message me, Jake@thegoodatheist.net. I'm now taking candidates. Send me your fucking resume and shit like that. And let's make this thing happen. I got tons of cool plans for what I want to do with the site, including with the new changes. There's a bunch of stuff I want to add, but, you know, that's all dependent on whether or not I can find this person. So no promises I can't keep. All right, with that, my name is Jacob Forge.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.